Lecture 7, Christmas Seminar. Next Step, Illumination. I am spiritually illumined. Lecture 7, Is everyone interested in spiritual illumination? That's a good question, isn't it? Are we interested in spiritual illumination? So many times we feel that we're interested in spiritual illumination, and we really aren't. What we're interested in is to have things, and have accomplishments, and have ideas that are going to be supportive and interesting to us, but is it really something that we want? You might stop and think about that, because that's a very positive attitude toward life that we must be aware of and be on top of. We all have ideas that we'd like to have fulfilled in our life. We have ideas of relationships. We have ideas of a fine meal. Ellen comes to the table with her chef's hat on and presents a very wonderful presentation about the meal we're going to have, and she has a very fine idea of what it's going to be. It's going to be this and this and this, she says with her magical words. And Is everyone interested? Is she making her presentation so fascinating that everyone is in? Does everyone instantly look up from whatever they're doing to pay attention to what she's offering to us? She puts it in as fascinating a way as she can. And because she puts it in such a fascinating way, everyone is interested. They're thinking, I can see what's on the table. I can see what's on the stove. I know everything that she's going to say, but how is she going to say it? So, with a big smile on her face and a big joy in her heart, she says, now this has been so lovingly prepared. It has come directly from Switzerland, from Russia, and all the other places that the food in her imagination has come from. But in truth, if you were getting down to the absolute fundamental fact, it came right out of Trader Joe's and out of Henry's. It didn't come from Russia. But perhaps it came from Russia before it got there. But as far as we're concerned, it came from Trader Joe's, or it came from Henry's market. And does it matter that she paints a lovely picture? Does it matter that she enthusiastically reports this to us and makes it sound so fascinating and so desirable? Well, yes, it does. If we each can make every segment of our life sound as fascinating and delightful as it is, we wake up to getting excitement out of life, to getting enjoyment out of life. Life ceases to be humdrum and ordinary ho-ho sort of thing, but it becomes a wow, and it becomes a magical thing. And say, you should have been there when Ellen served the meal the other night. She served things from all over the world. It was an international meal, and she had this and that, and of course you make it even sound more interesting than she did, because you've already had time to think about it. You ate it. Now, how did it taste? How were those potatoes from Russia? Potatoes from Russia? Come on now. They are from an Idaho farmer here in the United States, surely. But she said potato from Russia. Now, what she meant was, they are prepared in a Russian recipe standard. The potatoes might have come from Ireland, you know. They might have come from Iraq or Iran. They might have come from who knows where. But how they're prepared. You see, we have foods from all over the world, and they don't mean a thing. But how they're prepared means everything. We can take potatoes from around the world and make them into plain old mashed potatoes from America. Simple, ordinary, wonderful mashed potatoes. And we slop them up and we mess them up and we put milk on it and we put a little bit of sugar perhaps and we put a little salt and we make it into the most tasty potatoes that you could ever have. McDonald's has a real tough time keeping up with our menu of potatoes, because we really know how to make potatoes. And then we learn from our scientists that we should always eat the skins of the potatoes, because on the skins of every potato are all of the vitamins and minerals and other things in a great preponderance. They're just there abundantly. But we have been taught to throw them away. Now, why did we throw them away? Let's historically look back at why we threw potato peelings away. Basically, potatoes were cooked in an open fire, and they were lying on the coals. They were very dirty. And the soot and the coals and the dirt was on there in the sand. And so the potatoes, a hot potato, would always be peeled to take off that outer layer of soot and cooking material that got on it. And so that traditionally has come down through the years of a way that we eat our potatoes, not realizing that we're throwing out the best part of the potato, the part that's going to give us the most digestive values, the most minerals and vitamin value that we could ever have. But we do this with many things. But these are historical reasons that we do it. And, or I might say hysterical reasons, because they certainly have long since lost their histiosity. Long since they've been no longer a historical item. It's very physical and very present. Okay. We have our statement here, is everyone interested? And the answer is, no one is interested. No one is interested in their spiritual path. Oh, come on, Herb. We're all interested in our spiritual path. We're all interested in being spiritually illumined. No, we aren't. No, we aren't. How much do you pay for your spiritual illumination? Do you go down to the store and buy your spiritual illumination for $300 an ounce or a half ounce? You'd say, hey, I don't know. Is it going to do me that much good? Well, here you are, idiots. Strong, wonderful idiots. You go into your pharmacia, and you pay $2,000 for a quarter of an ounce of something, you know? The little drug that goes into the system that gives you, what do they call that, a nitroglycerin? You think that stuff is cheap? You go buy that yourself without having your hospital bill or something else covering it, hiding it from you. But you get these little minuscule aspects of drugs or emollients that are beneficial to the body. And they are costly. They are costly. And so we bought something for Ingeborg the other day, and I think it was $400, wasn't it, Ingeborg? Say what it was.
$83.
It was $83 for some silly little bottle of pills. And what did it cost before you had it knocked down? You paid $83. But how much did it cost before Medi-Cal took off their portion? You don't know?
They didn't take off nothing. I had to pay the full amount.
I see. Well, we did have a drug, didn't we, Ingeborg, that was a great deal of money?
I difficult to check because I have never the amount.
Well, Ingeborg, I'm telling a story here. And you could sort of go along with it and just say...
Before it was over $90.
Wonderful. as I recall, there was one drug that came to her that was $400. And I said to the druggist, $400? And he says, yeah. He said, but her co-payment is only $40. And I said, but $40, that's too much. She's never had a co-payment. She's never had to pay because she has this Medi-Cal and Medicare and you know, and everybody else cares and you don't have to. You know, and so it was very nice. But what I'm driving at here is that you go to the doctor and have certain pills, and these pills are very expensive, and you don't bat an eye at it, and you pay it every month, month after month after month. Some people have medical bills, bills for pills that run $20,000 a year. Really. There are people who are just staying alive with certain types of pills that are, you know, causing their system to be maintained, which are so expensive. It's outrageous. Now, my point in saying this, we are so willing to pay for a pill to keep us alive, but what are we willing to pay for a concept that will keep us alive without the pill? What are we willing to pay for a concept that will give us a new lease on life and let us live without pills, without the without the stuff for diabetes, the insulin, without all these other things that are needed, you know? I don't think of these pills, I don't think of the names of these things, they're just not important to me, but they are to people who are taking them, of course. But our spiritual life purifies us to such a degree that these things are not needed. These things are not needed. Sometimes people on the spiritual path, high on the spiritual path, you might say, because you call them teachers, have problems too. And they need pills too. And you say to yourself, oh my God, they're using pills and they really aren't very good. Helen was saying that about one person that she had met one time. And she was judging him. And then later she realized, hey, I'm judging this person. Perhaps he is taking these pills as a lesson to me. Perhaps he is doing something just to show me the path, the way, and the truth, and the life. But you see, right away we're going to judge. He cannot be following the teachings, or he cannot be teaching the right thing if he needs pills. And that's fascinating. Okay. How is it that we can spend so much money on medicine and not spend money on our spiritual growth? Now, does that mean you go and you pay your guru, you know, large sums of money so that you have him work with you? No. Does that mean that you go to all these gurus all over the world and you do that? Or you go to seminars and you go to programs and you pay? No, that's not the point. The point is, how much of you are you willing to invest in your spiritual life? It could be your money, but money is the least. The widow's mite was more vital and more valuable in the eyes of the receiver, that is the priest, than the man with great wealth who was giving his money to the organization. Money is important, yes, but more important is our attitude. I would rather work with a person who was intently interested in what I'm teaching than in a person who keeps pouring money on me and pouring money on me and then not doing the lessons and not following the teaching. Because I'm not here to have people pour money on me. I am independently wealthy. I am not here to have people pour money on me. I am here to have people who are vitally interested in what I am sharing. Otherwise, what value is it? If you went to a music school and you took piano lessons and you didn't practice the piano, do you think your piano teacher would say, oh yes, they're paying $75 an hour for their lessons here. And well, how are they doing? Well, and how are they doing? Well, and how are they doing? Well, they don't practice. Well, what good does it do for them to pay that much for per hour for a lesson? Well, sure, I can buy my bread. I don't want students like that. I don't want students to work with me who just give me money or just give me their attention but do not put it into practice. Because if you don't put this into practice, why waste my time? There are a lot of people I could be working with who would put it in practice. And I don't know who they are. I don't know who they are. I've worked with a lot of people in prisons, and some of them were dedicated like you wouldn't believe. Some of them were motivated because it makes them look good on their record to be doing these things in prison. Some of them really follow it, really live these principles. And the people who really live these principles are the people that I just adore beyond imagination. I would give them my life in a flash should they have a need for it. The thing is, when people really are interested in it, when, as our saying is here, is everybody interested? When everybody is interested, that's wonderful. I look at Billy Graham, one of our great evangelists in this nation, in this world. Outstanding man. He gets up there and he speaks to thousands and thousands and thousands of people around the world. He speaks to them in auditoriums and on television and radio. He speaks to them in every way. And these people say, "Yes, Lord," you know. They agree with him. But then they go out and they become the hordes of people who do not practice it. And I'm sure that Billy Graham's heart must be very heavy as he looks at a country that he has just told them, peace begins in your heart. When you have peace in your heart, you will have peace in your country. When you have peace in your heart, there will be peace on earth. And then war resumes after his lecture is over. How he must feel. But I believe Billy Graham is a little bigger than that. I believe he is like Jesus the Christ, who gave the message and let people follow it if they wished, or not if they didn't. His was just to be the living message. And so perhaps that's Billy Graham's purpose too, to be the living message. I know it's certainly my purpose, just to be the living message. And if anyone wants to follow the message, glory be. If nobody wants to follow it, hey, I'm having fun being myself and teaching what I believe and following what I believe and living what I believe. Is everyone interested? Sure, they're real interested. They're real interested in buying a pill that's going to make them instantly well. Buying a pill that's going to make them wealthy. Hey, where are those pills? By golly, wouldn't it be great to have pills that would make you wealthy? Yeah, I think the manufacturers have found the key to that. They make the pills and it makes them wealthy. These manufacturers, these pharmaceutical houses, are some of the biggest, most wealthy houses in the world. And bless their heart, we want it. We make them wealthy by buying their pills. And that's a great thing. But is anyone interested in their spiritual life? Is anyone? Are you? You say that you are, and yet you cannot shut up. You cannot shut up when I say, I don't feel so good. I feel fine. I feel wonderful. That's right. Hang in there. Yeah. My friend is bad. My friend is good. My mother is bad. My mother is good, you know. Your mother was a louse. Your mother was a nothing. She was a freak out, you know. And you say, how dare you talk about my mother that way? Oh, I'm touching pay dirt. You see, if I cannot touch you by the comments I make, then either the comments are not true, which is most likely the case, or you don't judge your mommy. You see, you're judging your mother when you say, yeah, she was that way, but that's not good, and you shouldn't talk about her that way. We can talk about her in the family that way, but you can't talk about her. You know, you've heard that. But the thing is, when we are untouched, when we know who we are, I come up to you and I'm your doctor and I say, well, my friend, I see you've got a little peakedness around the eyes there, a little bit red. And I see that your nose is a little runny. And I see that you have a rash across your chest here. And I see that your breathing, you know, is really sound and beautiful. You're coming down with pneumonia and hepatitis and blah, 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 ba-doo, ba-dee, and whatever words I can think of. And you say, oh, no, what do I do? You take pills, babe. You take pills for the hepatitis, you take pills for the pneumonia, you take pills, and this only costs you about $8,000 a month, and you should be done with this in about 5 months. And I get a cutback of 20% on all the pills that I've done. Now, I don't mean that. That sounds terrible. The doctors do an excellent job. They fulfill our need when we go to them. But I am talking to you about what you do before you go to the doctor. Before you go to the doctor, this means every day of your life, You wake up in the morning and you say, oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a wonderful feeling. Everything's going my way. You see, everything's going my way. Can you say that every day? Do you say that every day? Do you, when you jump out of bed, do you say, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect? You might have been sleeping on your arm, your leg might have been asleep and didn't want to hold you up. Whoops, the daisy. But hey, there's no problem. I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. You know, nothing to it. I oftentimes give lectures sitting in one position, sitting on my feet and everything, in fact, and I don't think a thing about it. And then when I'm ready to get up, I see people starting to get up and stretching, and then I think, oh, I should stretch. And I think, no, I don't look at anybody. I just get right up, and I'm sound as a bear. You know, you see these things, and you copy these things, and you think that what you see in the world is necessary for you. And it's not. It's not. What happens when you sleep all night long? Do you get up in the morning and are your legs asleep and your arms asleep and so forth? No, they're not. They're just as awake as you are. That may not be too awake, but they're just as awake as you are, you know? And you think these things are terrible, but there's no reason. No reason why any part of your body should not be as equally mobile as any other part, except that you think it. So, you get up in the morning. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a wonderful feeling. Everything's going my way. And you sing it to yourself. And you don't worry about it if anybody else hears you, because it doesn't matter. They'll start singing it too. And the more that you sing it, the more everybody will sing it. And you say, good goes from me, good comes to me. Good goes from me all day long. Good goes from me, good comes to me. Good goes from me all day long. And you say, I am a spiritually illumined being. 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 And then you say to yourself, I like me, 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 I'm a spiritually illumined being. And then, I live in my eternally ideal spirit, mind, and body. Or just, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body all day long, all day long, all day long. And she sing it all day long, you know. And people say, wow, that's a catchy little tune. That's a catchy little song. Let's learn that, you know. And you learn it. You learn it. You start singing this. And is everybody doing it? You bet they are. Because you're doing it. And you got this sparkle on your eyes and the smile on your face and you got this joy in your heart and you're just alive, 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 alive. Yeah. Are you spiritually illumined?
Yes.
Yes. When do you get spiritually illumined?
No.
When you do it to yourself. Because you have the choice. In your file cabinets inside of you are all sorts of experiences, good, bad, and indifferent. And you can open the file cabinet called good, or you can open the file cabinet called indifferent, you know, whichever you want. So open the file cabinet that's called good, and whoosh, out will flow everything. You know, remember what our dear friend, what was his name?
Bruce Almighty.
Huh?
Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bruce Almighty. And he, God said, I've got everything on you in this file cabinet here. And Bruce said, in that little file cabinet, you got everything on me? My goodness sake. And God says, well, Bruce said, can I take a look? And God says, go ahead. So he took a look and grabbed the cabinet, and the cabinet went sailing out for about 300 feet or better. And he was just flying with it. This is a beautiful concept that it was there. And then, whoop, it closed, and he says, this is some sort of trick. And he looked around for the trick, and it was no trick. It was the real thing. It was the impossible made quite possible. Now, we don't need to have those rather spectacular events in our life, although we do have them. But each one of us are too blind to see it. We don't see that this divine filing cabinet is opening up and we're flying across the room with it. We don't see that. But it's happening. It's happening to us every single day, every single moment of the day. Now just think. How many times during the day does your mind drift back to your childhood? How many times a day does your mind drift back to your former love affairs? Oh my goodness, some of you are very busy. And how many times does your mind drift back to your mom or your dad or your sisters and brothers or perhaps what you're doing? How many times does your mind go back to what you're actually doing right now? You're washing the dishes or you're writing a book or you're doing something. How many times does your mind go to that and go here and go there and go here and go there? You are using your filing cabinet. You got it wide open. And you're popping in and out of it as though, you know, you knew what you were doing. And you know right where to file it. You file it. Now, how do you file your love affairs? Do you file them by year? Or do you file them by the name of the individual? Or do you file them by the joy that the love affair brought you? Now, how do you file your friends? Do you file your friends by their name? Do you file your friends by their sincerity? Do you file their friends by number one friend, number two, number three, depending upon what relationship you feel you have with them? How do you file them? Now, think about it. Think about how you file your life. And this is what you're doing all day long. You're doing the Bruce Almighty thing, swing out with that file cabinet, crazy across the room. And you have all those miracles happening all the time with you. Now, what kind of miracles do you want to have? You know, I haven't told you this before, but I'll tell you now. There's another file cabinet right next to the one that you were looking in. And you didn't notice your name on it, so you didn't open it because that's somebody else's business. Well, anyhow, it is yours. And it's called fulfillment. And you haven't opened it. Now, if you start opening that file cabinet, the file cabinet called fulfillment, you will find that it is the fulfillment of every dream you could ever imagine for yourself. It is the happy attitude about every experience you've ever had. You see, that file cabinet is kind of tiny. It's kind of tiny. Not because you don't have a lot of fulfillments, but because the fulfillment does not include the preparation for the fulfillment. It does not include the planning for the fulfillment. It does not include the steps leading up to the fulfillment. It's a fulfillment. And so in one little cabinet, you can have a lot of fulfillments that are devoid of all the nonsense of how you got there. Now, I have each of you, and I again say I am so... I'm not a very good teacher. I say to each of you, write 5 acts of kindness and love that you have surreptitiously or unconsciously done in this past day. And do not give yourself a pat on the back. Do not refer to yourself with that you did it for yourself. Refer to the fact, what act of love and kindness, what act, not to whom, I set the table for Sylvia. Well, it's not Sylvia's table, it's our table, and we're all going to eat at it. And what do you mean you set it for Sylvia? Did you mean you had every plate with Sylvia's name on it? Sylvia, this is your plate? Now, Sylvia, you move from plate to plate and you eat, you know. And well, that'd be kind of silly, wouldn't it? Now, and then I brought the beef bouillon for the dogs. Now, you didn't bring the beef bouillon for the dogs. You brought the beef bouillon, right? And if the dogs get it, that's great. If the dogs don't get it, that's great. Short, concise, without motivation, without manipulation, without saying anything about how it is to happen and to whom it is to happen. I helped Gertrude with her big bag. You did not. You helped to carry a big bag. It didn't matter whether it was Gertrude. It might have been Gertrude's, but she might have been smart enough not to be around. And you had to carry it with somebody else. But you and Ingeborg carried Gertrude's bag as Gertrude sat there laughing and watching you and saying, ha, 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 ha. Now, wouldn't that be a wonderful blessing type thing? You see, you leave it, all the details out. I lifted the bag. I set the table. And like Sylvia said, I squatted down. Well, my God, I guess it is tough for you to squat down. But I squatted down and hugged the puppy. Well, now, I hugged the puppy. That's enough. I squatted down. My God, I really had to you know, get off of my high tower and get down there to squat. And, you know, you don't say that. You just say, I hugged the puppy. Now, that's okay, but that's certainly... okay, but it's not what you would call a high-value act, you know. High-value acts, if we may say that, are acts that are not normal. They're extraordinary. If you're going to pet a pet, that's not normal. I mean, that's just ordinary stuff. There's nothing special about it. But if you reached down and were petting the pet and you felt a flea and you caught the flea from your pet, that's special. That's something very special. That's very special. Yeah. It's actually a flea. or a tick. Or a tick or something like that. Now, if you say, especially since they don't have any, you're making my illustrations fall flat on their face. But think of these things. Now, what would you call a noble, glorious act of kindness and love, which was done sort of without motivation and without thought of approval or appreciation? You just did it. What would be a thing that might be relative to that? Can you think of anything? Can you think of anything that might qualify for that? Think about it. What would qualify? I was walking by the fireplace, and an earthquake happened. And the candles fell off the fireplace, but I was so alert, I took my skirt and held it out and caught them all before they hit the floor. And of course, if I took my skirt and did that, you'd say, that's really something. But it's unusual, you know. But you just naturally did the right thing. You know, you just naturally did it. And I was walking along the street with the children, and all the children I have are exceptionally good. They're all very good, especially Mary. She is the most mannerly little girl you could ever want. But something inside of me said, take Mary's hand right now. So I reached down and took Mary's hand right now. And just then, we walked by her kitten, who started to go out into the road in the traffic. And Mary was going to go and get the kitten and bring it back from the traffic. And inside of me, something said, take her hand. And I didn't say, well, you never have to take Mary's hand. She always behaves. Mary always walks with us very lovingly and very, very properly along the street. Mary would never do anything unusual. But when her cat's life was involved, she might thoughtlessly go and do something that she thought was necessary. Do you understand? Now, she knew the cars were in the street. She knew the cars might hurt her cat. She knew that the cars might hurt her. But she wasn't concerned about her. She was only concerned about her cat. But you had listened to your inner voice, and it said, take Mary's hand. Take Mary's hand! And you don't do it because you just haven't got the... you don't listen. You haven't trained yourself to listen. And the inner voice just keeps going, take Mary's hand, take Mary's hand, take Mary's hand, take Mary's hand, you know, and finally it gets so loud you say, well, what the hell, why should I take Mary's hand? She is perfect. Boink! Bye, Mary. Yeah. You have to find another little girl to take Mary's place, you know. But isn't that stupid? Isn't that stupid? And don't we all do that? We haven't trained ourselves to listen. Because the voice tells us what to do. Now, Ellen was walking with her grandchildren along a street in Zurich. And Ellen's daughter was raising these children in a very magnificent way. And the children would never think of running in the street anything more than the man in the moon. And Ellen was kept thinking, well, what if they ran the street to herself? They might be hurt, they might be hurt, they might be hurt, they might be hurt. And so finally she said to Mariella, the mother, she said, shouldn't we be more careful of the children? And the mother said, I have already surrounded the children with my pure white light of love. The children behave perfectly. They would never run into the street, regardless of what the reason was, because they know that the sidewalk is for them and the street is for the big people to play. And as Ellen talked with her daughter about it, she said, she believes the principles I'm teaching even more than I do, and she's living them even more than I do, because I'm being a grandmother right now, you know. And sometimes when we fall out of focus of who we are, we do silly things, and when we do silly things, we just lose the whole ballpark. We lose the whole game. And we lose the game because we forget that we're playing the game. And we forget to listen. Do you think that when the umpire who guides the game and so forth, and that the coaches and stuff are not speaking to the men on the field and speaking in their heart and their conscience, John, it's coming up above. Turn around, John. Look, you catch the ball. John, look. And then John says, oh. You know, some are taught very well to learn, to listen within. And some of the coaches don't know that that's what they're doing, that they're really communicating. But you see, if they would realize that, they would have such rapport and such camaraderie, such intercourse with their players, that there'd be instant recognition of what they're saying to them. And that's a fabulous thing. But this is a fabulous thing for a mother. A mother and a child are oftentimes so interwoven mentally and spiritually and emotionally that they feel each other's requests, they feel each other's requirements, you know, beautifully. Like a mother says to her child, hey, go have fun. And the kid says, boy, Johnny's mother doesn't him tell her. She says, you do this and you do that. And the mother says to her child, Freddie, I know you will always do the right thing because you listen to all the things I've ever told you about what is good manners and what is the right thing to do, and you follow it. Now, what Johnny and his mother do, I have no idea. But I do know that I have worked with you, and I always tell you, you know the right thing to do. Johnny, you are a brilliant boy. See? Then he acts that way. But if you say, be careful now, don't run the street, the car's out there, you might get killed, you know, and be careful of this here, and when the ball flies, make sure that you don't run into harm's way, you know, and make sure the ball doesn't hit you in the head, you know, and the guy gets hit in the head all the time, you know. These are just attitudes, and the attitude creates it in your experience. And we, as the teachers, if you will, we as the leaders, we as the parents, we as whatever role we play, we have to be so pure all of the time that our thoughts are only what the child would benefit from, and also we would benefit from. One woman told me that her husband always stopped on the way home on payday and stopped at the bar and had 5 or 6 drinks. And I said to her, is there something wrong with that? Well, you should bring that money straight home. Yeah. Well, does he take from his income an allowance to do something that he likes to do now and then? Oh, yeah, he has so much of an allowance. How much allowance does he have? Oh, $30. Well, now, that's nice. Now, how much does he spend when he's in the bar? 7? How much does he spend other times? Nothing. What does he do with the rest of $30? I don't know. I haven't seen him spend it, you know. You mean he's only spending 7 of the 30, and you're worried about him in the bar on the way home from work because you think that he's going to do something bad? Well, he might spend it all. Do you think that? Do you think that after working all week long to provide for his family, he's going to take it and squander it? Is that what you think? You know? If that's what you think, then that's what cause you're putting in motion, and that's the experience you're going to get. You see, we live in a spiritual world. We live in a lumen world. And who is illumining it? You? You? You with your negative thoughts? You with your doubt? You with your feelings that there are imperfect people in your world? My goodness sakes. How could we ever have an imperfect person in our world except that we are imperfect? And then again, maybe we're not imperfect. Maybe our attitude of hatred or mistrust or doubt, maybe that's perfect. And maybe love and peace and joy and harmony, they're not perfect. I don't know. What kind of a world are we living in? What are our values? Who are we and where are we going and what do we try to get out of? You see, a spiritually illumined person is a person who has learned to listen within, has learned to forget all the outer and just listen only to the inner. Forget all of the symbols of the rest of the world and hear only the symbol of the world within. We can all train in this, and that's part of the main thing that I do with you, is the training in this, to be aware of it and to understand it and to flow with it. But in all this training, do we take control? Do we take control, or do we just sort of wish we could take control? If you play the piano and you hit the wrong note, you stop right then and you teach yourself the right note. And you say, this is C, this is C, this is C. And you say, well, that's not such a bad one. C, that's right in the middle there. But this is C, this is C. Your finger didn't always hit C. It hit the note around it, but not C. And so you're hitting that note and with the right finger that's supposed to hit it, the finger that's designed to hit it. And then you go back to playing, and you will find your finger will know where C is, because your mind knows where C is. But up to that point, you were a little careless. You were a little careless in your thinking about it. Do you know where the dash is on your typewriter? Do you know where the ampersand is? Do you know where the for sign? The at sign is, you know where those things are? Without looking? Yeah. Ellen says up there in the upper left. That's right. But without looking, you've memorized them too. That's good. But do it without looking, because they are not planning on changing the keyboard, as far as I know. So, I mean, Bill Gates hasn't got his hands on that yet. But you wait, he will. Oh, yeah. Because there is a better way for the keys, Ellen. There is a better way to function the keys, because the fingers that are the most nimble should be the fingers that hit the keys that are used most often. Now, what difference does it make to you with the quartz keyboard that you have on your typewriter? You have just learned it, that's all. But it's as illogical as anything could be anyhow. But it is the keys that are most used in the center of the keyboard. So, theoretically, your thumb and your forefinger and so forth hit these keys because they're the most used, and that's just the way it is. But think about it. Think about it. If we were to redesign the keyboard right now and then turn it into Bill Gates, and he would put it on all of his computers. A lot of people would object. because they already know the old keyboard. But a lot of people would just take it as a matter of course. Bill Gates did this, it must be for our benefit. It must be something that's going to speed us along the way and make our work a little easier. You know? But meanwhile, you have to learn it. I bought an Apple computer, and it was supposed to be so easy. Well, my old friends, the keys that I used the most, were not in the places that I expected them to be. And my desktop wasn't arranged the way I was used to it in the personal computer, and so you have to learn all that new stuff. But it's okay. It's okay. You see, stop and think. People die when they stop being interested in life. People die when they stop being interested in life. When people are interested in life, they live a long time, and they live very happy lives. When people care about being interested in life. Now, how can you be interested in life? Well, if you're a PC person, buy an Apple. It causes you to learn many things, and then upgrade your programs as you go along. I talked with our webmaster, and I said, well, Daniel, how does it feel to be in an XP professional and so forth? He says, oh, it's there. I said, how do you feel? He says, well, I'd rather like 95 and 98. I mean, now that's years ago. But what is he saying? He doesn't have to learn something new. He works with something that functions, and he knows how to handle it. He knows all its nuances, and he's very comfortable with it. Are you very comfortable with it, too? You know? Aside, people who get married, they have a big problem. They have to adjust to their partner, okay? So, you get adjusted to your partner, and then your partner goes and does some stupid thing like become interested in spiritual qualities, becomes interested in being a musician, becomes interested in other talents that enlarge their awareness. And in that interest, they look at you and say, well, what are you learning these days? You know, and you say, nothing. And they say, interesting. But what's going to happen to those people? Those people who are ever learning, who are ever expanding their horizons of their own self, these people are growing. These people are becoming aware of the magnificence that they are. And in the process of becoming aware of the magnificence that they are, they grow apart from the one who doesn't grow. You've had many friends over the years in your life, and many have gone their way, and you have gone your way. And you may go back and see your old friends, but you have nothing in common. You have nothing in common because each of you has grown so beautifully and so separately and so alone. And this is how it should be. But think about it. Think about it. That is such a lovely way to do things, such a lovely way to handle your life, because you're the master. You're the one who's making the strides. Now, would you like it if your little child were to go to school and not learn anything?
No.
You'd find that it's a waste of time. Would you like it if your family was not interested in traveling and seeing the sights of the world? That would not be fun, would it? Would you like it if anything in the world were limiting you in any ways, keeping you from doing things? No, you wouldn't like it at all. Do you think that the Arnaldi children would be happy if you took away their skates? If you took away their hockey sticks? If you took away their hockey pucks, if you took away their skis, if you took away their toboggans and their sleds, if you took away their creativity for designing and creating new devices of most charming, interesting torture, that they lay down on their back on a scoot board and they go zooming down the hill and, oh, how do they see where they're going or what they're doing? And these things are made professionally for them, too. And you wonder, my goodness, will I have him around tomorrow? And you don't start, you don't say, think those things. You know. You say, what? What do you say?
I surround you with my pure white light of love.
I surround you with my pure white light of love. All is in divine order. You see, you do not look at the problem. You look only at the solution. And as you look at the solution, then you get the solution. This is what it's all about. This is what life is all about. Think on these things now, because miracles happen in them. So, my friends, this is Lecture 7. Is everyone interested? And we say, yes, everyone is interested, especially me. I love you, I love you, I love you.